Today, we'll be seeing you later. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, world's latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In a further emphasis of the volatility hitting the markets at the moment, as part of the October effect, Wall Street stocks closed lower on Wednesday, unable to sustain a late-day surge after data showing strong US labour demand again suggested the Federal Reserve will keep interest rates higher for longer. And the Russian-directed OPEC Plus confirmed a formal reduction in oil production to try to keep prices high. And a fifth consecutive 50 basis point rate hike from the Reserve Bank of New Zealand on Wednesday reminded investors that inflation remains the main focus of central banks. New Zealand dollar was last up 0.14% at 57.44, having jumped as much as 1.3% earlier in the session. The Aussie dollar was last up 0.12% to 0.6494. The US data flows are still pointing to strong economic activity, which the Fed is seeking to weaken. The stock and bond rally of the last few days was driven by weaker economic and labour market data. Today, stocks and bonds are both selling off after a more hawkish policy decision from New Zealand and stronger economic data from the US, said JP Morgan. It's hard to read too much into day-to-day price moves when markets are this skittish, but the broad driver of markets for the rest of the third quarter will probably be the trajectory of policy rates. US private employers stepped up hiring in September, the ADP National Employment Report on Wednesday showed, suggesting rising rates and tighter financial conditions have yet to curb labour demand as the Fed battles high inflation. On Wednesday, the ADP National Employment Report showed private employment rose by 208,000 in September, above the 200,000 consensus forecast of economists, while separately the Institute of Supply Management's non-manufacturing PMI reading came in slightly above expectations. Fed officials have insisted on aggressive rate tightening to battle inflation, a message the market has feared would lead to a hard landing and likely recession. US Fed Governor Philip Jefferson reiterated overnight that inflation was the top target for policymakers and that growth would suffer in efforts to bring it down. San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly did take a slightly softer line, saying the impact of the dollar, which is up sharply this year on other currencies and economies, was a concern, but nevertheless, the path is clear. We're going to raise rates to restrictive territory and then hold them there for a while, she said. We are committed to bringing inflation down, staying course until we are well and truly done. Interest rates have reached a point that was potentially a little bit restrictive or just neutral, Daly added, though insisting that more rate increases were necessary to bring inflation down. And Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic echoed those comments, saying it's important for the Fed to remain purposeful and resolute in the battle against inflation, saying the Fed's fight against inflation is likely still in early days, despite glimmers of hope in recent data. From here, investors are likely to focus on Friday's US job report, which will be watched for clues on the possible trajectory of the Fed's monetary policy. The Fed's expected to deliver a fourth straight 75 basis point rate hike when policymakers meet November 1 and 2, according to the CME's FedWatch tool. But there was a mysterious bounce in the middle of the day on Wednesday, and it is possible that one giant options transaction may have sparked the S&P 500's bounce, according to Wells Fargo. The trade, which involved buying and selling call options tied to the index at a cost of around $31 million, probably helped fuel a recovery that saw the benchmark gauge ease a 1.8% decline, said Chris Harvey, the firm's head of equity strategy. Theories that derivatives trading has potentially driven momentum in an underlying asset have been relatively common in this year's topsy-turvy market, though these are often disputed. Generally, the view is that a market maker on the other side of an options transaction will have to buy or sell stocks to balance positioning. Depending on the exposure, a concept referred to by the Greek word delta, the dealer may exert outsized influence on the market. This time, in the eyes of Harvey, the impact was positive. The Greeks of the trade are likely what gave a midday pop to the S&P 500, he wrote to a note to clients. The trade included buying 20,000 S&P 500 call expiring in October with a strike price of 4,500 and 14,000 bullish contracts expiring in March at a strike of 4,300, while selling 48,000 calls maturing in January with an exercise price at 4,500, a bet that essentially says stocks would rally in coming months. The dealers who took the other side of this had a huge amount of risk to offset, said Gareth Ryan, managing director at IUR Capital, adding that they could have bought equity futures to keep their books neutral. It certainly could have impacted the cash market. This is one of the largest trades by size that I've seen in a long time. But not everybody sees the transaction as that obvious reason for the S&P 500 spike. Chris Murphy, co-head of derivatives strategy Susquehanna International Group, said the S&P 500's recovery coincided with a retreat in the dollar and an upward revision in the Federal Reserve's Bank of Atlanta's GDP Now Index. The US dollar pulled back off highs, and that was the main catalyst for the S&P rebound, plus the Atlanta GDP, he said. The delta component of that option trade was not huge. It did not have a big impact on the S&P 500 rally. But the point I want to make here is that this derivative story and what's going on below the waterline, I think is quite critical to understand because it can move markets, and we've seen that across gold as well as the stock market. So it's worth watching this. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.14% to 30,273. The S&P 500 lost 0.2% to 3,783. And the NASDAQ Composite dropped 0.25% to 11,148. Eight of the 11 major S&P 500 sectors fell, led by a 2.25% decline in utilities and a 1.9% drop in real estate. The energy sector led the market higher, though, up 2.06%, after the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and allies agreed to cut oil production, the deepest since the COVID-19 pandemic began, curbing supply in an already tight market. Treasury yields shot up again on Wednesday after the softer economic data failed to bolster budding hopes the Fed might pivot to a less hawkish policy stance. The yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury was at 3.755%, while the 2-year was at 4.1461, still, of course, in recession inversion. Twitter lost momentum in line with its peers a day after surging 22% on billionaire Elon Musk's decision to proceed with his original $44 billion bid to take the social media company private. Twitter fell 1.35% to $51.30, and Tesla, the electric car maker headed by Musk, also slid to $240.81. As well as a fall in Tesla, consumer discretionary stocks were also weighed down by weakness in cruise line stocks like Carnival Corporation that fell 4%, while Royal Caribbean Cruises was down 1%, although Norwegian Cruise Lines cut losses to end the day just flat. A climb in chip stocks also supported the broader move off the lows in tech, with Marvell Technology Group and Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing up more than 2%. But oil prices jumped for a third day in a row as OPEC Plus announced what was billed as a deep production cut of 2 million barrels per day. And that was even below the 3.5 million barrel daily shortfall in the group's previously announced output target. Also, with no breakdown of where the reduction would come from, and meaning which countries would be cutting and how much they would be doing, the alliance seems to expect the market to just swallow whatever it spat out and hopefully do its bidding of sending prices back near the highs of the year. Predictably, oil bulls did just that, lapping up the party line that came out of the first in-person meeting in 2 years of the 13-member Saudi-led Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its 10 allies, steered, of course, by Russia. Combined with the plunge in weekly US crude and fuel inventories reported by the Washington-based Energy Information Administration, or EIA, the OPEC Plus news proved more powerful than it might otherwise have been. Crude prices jumped about $2 a barrel or more, within an hour of the OPEC Plus and EIA announcements, extending to $6 to $8 in all their gains since the start of the week. New York traded West Texas Intermediate settled up at $88.06 per barrel, off the session high actually of $88.42, and WTI has fallen 12.5% in September and 24% in the third quarter. Brent, the London traded global benchmark for oil, settled up 2.17% at $93.78 a barrel. Brent was down 11% last month and finished the July-September period lower by 22%. It's going to be a very volatile market for oil over the next few weeks, said John Kidlove, partner in New York energy hedge fund Again Capital. He said OPEC Plus was obviously trying to seize back control of the market with the so-called deep cut, but unlike 2 years ago, when it was absolutely transparent on where the reductions would come from, this time they gave no breakdown as yet. It's obvious that OPEC Plus has grown increasingly arrogant since the days of the pandemic with its ability to move prices again. No thanks to the sanctions on Russia, Kidlove said. Well, not every trader is a fool to gullibly swallow all that the alliance spits out. Ed Moyer, analyst at Onya, concurred with Kidlove that the market will likely see some extreme volatility in the near term. Oil should remain supported here, but upside will be capped when in advance of the $100 a barrel level. WTI's peak for this year was around 130, while Brent was around 140, both reached a fortnight after the Ukraine invasion and the imposition of Western sanctions on Russian energy exports. OPEC Plus bluff, if it can be called that, is its insistence that the 2 million barrel per day cut it announced on Wednesday was a substantial reduction, despite the alliance being some 3.583 million barrels short of its daily target for August, according to a recent report. Prior to that, it's been reported that the alliance fell short of its July production target by about 2.89 million barrels daily. And Goldman Sachs, the Wall Street bank that's often bullish on oil, estimated that under the best circumstances, the real OPEC Plus cut would be around 500,000 barrels daily, not 2 million. But Saudi Energy Minister Abdulaziz bin Salman seemed irked by suggestions that the OPEC Plus cut would underwhelm. At a news conference on Wednesday, the minister, the dominating force at OPEC Plus, who typically silences in dissent to his plans, dismissed a question from Reuters that sought clarification on the cuts and called the Goldman Sachs estimates false. It's false that the real oil cut will be 500,000. Our estimates are 1 to 1.1 million barrels per day, he said, but then didn't provide any backing for his projections. The White House indicated that the United States would hit back with more releases of oil from the U.S. Energy Stockpile Reserve and find other measures as well to counter the OPEC Plus move. The Biden administration had worked hard in bringing pump prices of gasoline down from a record high of $5 a gallon in mid-June to averages at around $3.70 till last week, and had no intent in seeing that disappear before the midterm elections due next month, White House insiders said. The president will continue to direct SPR releases as appropriate to protect American consumers and to promote energy security, and he's directing the sector of energy to explore any additional responsible actions to continue increasing domestic production in the immediate term, the White House said. The SPR balance currently stands at under 423 million barrels. That's the lowest since July 1984. Other measures being weighed up by the White House to keep gasoline prices low is a limit on the amount of fuel that can be exported out of the US. An Energy Department spokesperson told Reuters on Tuesday that US oil companies were raking in record high profits after Russia's invasion of Ukraine instead of ensuring that American consumers and allies have a reliable fuel supply at a fair price. The administration is going to continue to look at all tools available to protect Americans and to uphold our commitment to our allies, the spokesperson said. But oil wasn't the only thing rallying Wednesday morning. The dollar and the US bond yields were surging as well, recovering ground lost since last week on stronger than expected employment indicators that suggested a robust September jobs report from the US government on Friday. A rally in the dollar and bond yields typically weigh on commodity prices. The dollar rebounded from recent weaknesses on Wednesday as investors viewed the US Federal Reserve's aggressive stance on interest rates as likely unchanged, with the euro and sterling down by at least 1%. The euro was down 1% at 0.9888, and was set for its biggest daily percentage slide since September the 23rd, after rising 1.7% on Tuesday. The dollar index, measuring the greenback against the basket of currencies, was last up about 1.04% on Tuesday. It had its biggest daily percentage decline since March, but now it's up to 111.21. And sterling was down 1.1% at 1.1328 after rising for six straight sessions. Its fall extended slightly as UK Prime Minister Liz Truss pledged to bring down debt as a share of national income just over a week after the government's plans to slash taxes and ramp up borrowing spooked markets. Adding to the pressure on the pound, data showed Britain's private sector economy last month suffered the sharpest contraction in activity since a COVID-19 lockdown early last year. And recent gains for most major currencies against the dollar have been underpinned by hopes among investors and traders that the Fed will raise interest rates by less than previously expected. You had a general risk on where the euro, sterling really traded well and the stock market gained. I kind of think this is just investors exploring a trading range, said Mark Chandler. The bottom line is the bounce in risk assets is not taking place because of a change in Fed views, he said. In other currencies, the dollar was up 0.2% against the Japanese yen to 144.53, while the dollar was up 0.4% at 7.1160 against China's offshore yuan. Chinese authorities have come out in recent weeks with manoeuvres to slow the yuan's slide. And elsewhere, gold futures traded at around $1,724 per ounce. Finally, it's worth noting the fallout from the strong US dollar as other economies try to react. For example, South Korea's foreign exchange reserves shrank by nearly $20 billion in September. That's the second biggest monthly drop on record as authorities stepped up dollar selling intervention to counter the won slump to a 13.5-year low. The country's foreign exchange reserves stood at $416.77 billion at the end of September. That's down $19.66 billion from the $436.43 billion a month earlier, according to the Bank of Korea. While still among the largest in the world, the country's reserves fell to the lowest level since early July 2020 and saw the second biggest monthly decrease on record after a $27.42 billion decline in October 2008. Reserves have fallen in 9 out of the last 11 months. The central bank cited measures to ease volatility in the foreign exchange market, an apparent reference to dollar selling intervention, as a factor that contributed to the losses, along with declines in the converted value of non-dollar assets and financial institutions' foreign currency deposits. The won ended September with a monthly loss of 6.5% against the dollar. That's the fastest in 11 years, after touching the weakest level since March 2009, while the US dollar index rose 3.2%. Other countries are also struggling with king dollar, which of course also translates to higher cost imports like oil, which are of course priced in dollar terms. So once again, the data streams are confusing, but the risks of high volatility and more market falls should not be dismissed. That said, the volatility index in the US was down 1.79% to 28.55, but Bitcoin mirrored the major exchanges, slipping to hold itself just above 20,000 US. And as I said yesterday, the markets are grasping at straws, but frankly, they are just straws in the wind. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high. Price discovery and price transparency are hard to find. And then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.